Hello, everyone. Welcome into an episode of Kentucky Daily. Used to be a daily podcast. Will soon be a daily podcast again. I'm your host, Sean Smith, joined, as always, by my co-host, Derek Terry. Derek, how many holidays and days have passed since we've done this? I think we've had Thanksgiving, we've had Christmas, we've had New Year's, we've had a Super Bowl, Winter
St.
Crown,
Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day. Kentucky went from probably preseason top five to the bubble to a five seed to losing to Vandy twice to now they're in Greensboro getting set to play Providence. But it's been a while, and hope to God there's still people subscribed to this that are hoping to hear from us at some point again.
Also, St. Patrick's Day is Friday, so already thrown off here.
We beat that.
Yeah, we got that coming up. Coincidentally, the night that Kentucky starts its NCAA tournament journey that at some points of this season felt like there would be no NCAA tournament journey. Sean, so much time has passed. I don't even know where to start with this basketball team or how we ended up at this point that we've ended up at. But it's here, and this team managed to salvage what was looking to be at one point an awful season to get to the tournament. So some kudos there, but I don't know, Sean. I don't know if they get beat out Friday night. I don't see how this fan base is going to be very pleasant for the next 9 months or what have you until – or 10 months or – probably more like 9 months before they get back out there on the court. No, like seven months. Yeah, October, 7 months. This is March. This longer, is March.
Longer than the layoff we had
on
the show. Yeah. So, which is done, by the way. But we'll stick around to the end of the episode, and we'll announce some plans for this podcast and what's going to happen very soon. But let's start by talking about what's coming up this weekend. And I think you bring up a good point. The fan base, and I put something out on Twitter yesterday and asked a question where, what would it take for Kentucky fans to call this a successful season? And I don't even I mean, I know it's a weird question, right? Like, because Kentucky basketball history, anything short of a Final Four or a national championship is considered what? Just like, blah, they didn't do what the goal was. But Derek, given the way the season has gone, given the injuries, the recent lack of success in postseason play, I would put it surviving the first weekend. I think a lot of people would probably come out of it looking forward to next year with what Kentucky has coming in. But even just beating Providence is a step in the right direction. But if they don't survive the first weekend, I don't think anyone's really going to feel much better about Kentucky basketball, and the heat's just going to turn up on John Calipari even more. I mean, Paul Feinbaum has made it an annual thing now to kind of come at Cal's neck. Last year it was that he was no longer the man for the job, and then this week it was this is a critical couple of weeks for Cal. I agree with that. Not the first part. I agree with the critical part. Like, this is crucial.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think if you were to poll the majority of fans online or whatever, like if you started a Twitter poll, I think overwhelmingly winning, like avoiding a loss to Providence, an 11 seed, which would be an upset if you were to lose to them, without even adding in the whole Bryce Hawkins factor. I mean, if he happens to have a good game, that's a whole other conversation within its own right. But I think most people just want, well, I mean, most people want a Final Four, of course, but you kind of have to recalibrate expectations with what we've seen with this team. But to end that streak where they have not won an NCAA tournament game since 2019, and I know it's only been two tournaments since then, technically, since COVID ended the 2020 tournament before it even started. But that, to me, is like, get that off your back, especially in a season where it looked like you might not even make the tournament to begin with, like I said earlier, and they've managed to do that. And really by the end of the year, I mean, they were safely in. They ended up with the sixth seed, no danger at all of missing the tournament as it turned out. But this season has been so tough in the sense that, like, we're just not used to these kind of seasons at Kentucky where there are several lows. You lose at home to South Carolina, which is one of the, like, this is not just your run-of-the-mill, oh, the worst team in the conference beat you. Like, if you go in the Ken Pom era, 20 years worth of data, this was the worst SEC team to come into Rupp Arena and win a game. I mean, they ended up with 21 losses, South Carolina did. No marquee non-conference wins, which, you know, they played pretty good. I mean, the most marquee win was, what, a Michigan team that didn't even make the tournament. That was their best non-conference win. So you lost you know, there was nothing to build on in your resume in the non-conference. And then, you know, the loss at Georgia was a bad loss, but that's not necessarily a killer. I mean, you're going to see a lot of teams lose games like that over the course of a season. But this team also had some real highlights. Sweeping a Tennessee program that, like, Kentucky has really struggled. I mean, much better Kentucky teams than this have lost to much worse Tennessee teams than this since Rick Barnes has been at Tennessee. So to sweep this team, which, you know, at one point in the season, Tennessee, I believe, was number one on KenPom. It wasn't for very long, but they were a top five team for most of the year. To be up 40 points on Auburn, a team that's a 9 seed at Rupp Arena, that's hard to do. It's hard to be up 40 points on a team in your conference. So there were always things about this team that were kind of sucky back in, but it's also like they turn right around here at the end of the season and lose to an NIT Vandy team, which, with respect to Vanderbilt, had played like a tournament team over the last month. So I'm not saying this was some kind of like horrible loss, but again, like, you let that team, which lost its best player, and I know Kaysen was out for most of the game or most of the second half anyway, against Vanderbilt and Rupp Arena. But at the end of the day, the results are the results, and Vanderbilt beat you twice within like 10 days.
They did.
So there's like enough there.
Two road games, pretty much. Yeah, it was in Nashville, but it was in front of Kentucky. It was in front of BBN.
But that's also coming off a game where Kentucky manages to go to Arkansas again, either an 8 or a 9 seed. I can't remember which, but a tournament team. You go to their home floor after they'd already beat you by double digits in Rupp Arena. You don't have a point guard, and you play a great game and beat them. Put up like 88 points. And it's just like, this team's so confusing. So it's been a hard year from a standpoint of just trying to like get behind this team, and because of that, I think it's caused a lot of strong reactions from myself included, especially after that South Carolina loss. I thought they were toast at that point. So this brings us to the tournament, Sean, and like, I couldn't tell you what the only thing I know is, like, don't lose to Providence this first game. And like you said, I don't think people are going to be thrilled to only get to the second round if they were to lose to in that second round game, which would likely be against Kansas State. I still think people would be upset, but I don't know exactly what it would be. I mean, obviously a national championship, but, like, do we trust this team to win 6 straight?
At one point on this job, I was confident when booking hotels for the entire weekend, whether it was in Nashville or Tampa or where. Thank God I'm staying with family this week, because if they get bounced on Friday, I might get in my car and be back by Saturday morning. That's what I did in Nashville. So, no, Kentucky fans need some excitement. The perfect thing would be to win to get out of the first weekend, have that full week of buildup going into the Sweet 16, and kind of make it feel normal again. And I keep bringing up that they haven't won a tournament game since March 2019 in Kansas City, when they beat Houston on the Tyler Hero shot, the P.J. Washington block, a moment that a lot of Kentucky fans remember. We just didn't think it was going to be the moment we'd remember only for 4 years. And then the loss to Auburn. And I get a lot of people that come at me and say, well, that's not fair, because 2020, they won the league and they had a chance, and they probably would have won some games in postseason play. But the one thing that we should have learned, though, from last year, or there are no guarantees. Regardless of where you're seated, they lost to St. Peter's. That year, that team lost to Evansville and had some moments in league play, had lost to Tennessee at Rupp just a week prior, and then without Ashton Hagans goes to Florida and looks good. So were we going to have the same kind of pattern and then them lose the opening game of the SEC tournament? I don't know. Nobody knows. That team had good guard play, and I think that's what would have won the postseason game. So I do think that that team had a chance to win some games. I don't know if it was to get to a Final Four or just win one or two, but you can't change the fact that the postseason was canceled. They're still on a drought here when other blue blood programs are not. And that's what I look at now. And here's the one advantage Kentucky fans have this week. Tell me a year when Greensboro is a location that there's no Duke or North Carolina.
That's the running joke, right?
It is.
They're always going to be there.
They're always in Greensboro. And even the committees ship Duke to Orlando.
Yeah.
And is Kentucky seated correctly? I have no idea. I don't know if anyone in the SEC got seated correctly outside of Alabama, because I think Tennessee, obviously their resume at one point, probably had a resume of a 2 seed, maybe a 3 seed, and then they get a 4. Texas A&M wins 17 league games, finishes ahead of Kentucky in the regular season. I know they had the loss at Rupp Arena, but it was a close loss. Then they get all the way to the SEC final, and they're a 7. I just think a lot of times that the committee bumps teams. We talked about this over the weekend, you and I did, that they create storylines and scenarios and things like that. And in my opinion, this was one the committee looked at leading up to it and said, six seed Kentucky, 11 seed Providence, Bryce Hopkins, final dagger to John Calipari. That is my belief. Fully my belief. Just like Kentucky, Indiana, and Des Moines 7 years ago. Kentucky misseeded that year. Like, I just think, or then you get back to 2014, the team that was supposed to go undefeated plays the team that is undefeated in Wichita State. Like, I think that there's storylines that the committee looks for that first weekend. And I mean, it's not wrong, but
it's not just the first weekend. I think in 2017 with UCLA rematch in the Sweet 16.
That's true.
I mean, a UCLA team, I think it only lost like four or five games the whole season and that beat Kentucky and Rupp. And of course, Kentucky played an epic game against North Carolina and Vegas that year. I mean, that was a loaded regional for a Kentucky team that, for my money, if you're asking me, it's not to say that the 2019 team couldn't have won a national title. It just, to me, the 2017 feels like maybe the last really, really special team.
I agree. And then when we've seen it, when the sea kind of parts, it doesn't work out. 2018, Kentucky gets through that first weekend. Arizona gets upset. You get Nate Oates at the time. We didn't know what Nate Oates was going to be.
Well, it's the first time I heard about Nate Oates. His comments about Cal.
And I thought, in that moment, I think I kind of knew. I was like, this guy's going to be someone to watch just because if you're at Buffalo and you're confident kind of taking on Calipari that way, you've probably got some swag about you here that's going to either be your doom or something that's going to really propel you. We can get it. That's another topic of conversation for Nate Oates and some of the things that he says, but he's got a good basketball team. You and I were talking about Alabama last night, but let's get back to Kentucky Providence. I told you yesterday that if chalk holds and Kentucky plays K-State, I wish that they were playing K-State first instead of Providence. And the reason being is for K-State is not the team that scares me this weekend. Because when you look at the metrics and you look at what they are in KenPom, that is the team that Kentucky has beaten this year. The team that's not super efficient offensively, but inside the top 20 defensively. And Kansas State is 51st in offensive efficiency and 19th in defense. I mean, Tennessee's number two in defense. Kentucky beat them twice. Arkansas, top 20. They beat them on the road in Fayetteville. It's the teams that score the basketball efficiently, like a Marquette in this region, that is going to be the teams that I watch that can bounce Kentucky, because Kentucky struggles to defend those teams. I think Kentucky can have some defensive success against K-State. Now, Providence is trending the other direction. But the one team that has beaten Kentucky in the course of the last 3 weeks, it was the most efficient offensive team that they'd played, and it was Vandy. Vandy not good defensively, but efficient offensively. I just don't think that Providence can do the things that Vandy does offensively. I think that Vandy was a greater threat from three-point range and some guys that can knock some shots down. If Kentucky can just contain the basketball, Derek, I think that they got a chance to win this game. I do think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be one of those games in the final 5 or 6 minutes where Kentucky fans are on the edge of their seat. But I do think that Kentucky wins out. And another reason why, there's pressure on Cal. There's pressure on Kentucky. Can you imagine the pressure that's on Bryce Hopkins, though, that he's going to put on himself? Because it's him against Kentucky, and it's Kentucky against Bryce. Like, it's a collective effort for Kentucky. It's a single effort for Bryce. And if he pigeonholes himself into that rivalry battle, Providence is going to lose.
Yeah, we could probably spend, 2 hours talking about Calipari's usage of players and, the people that I've had problems with and how he's used them. I actually, don't have that big of an issue with how he used Bryce Hopkins last year's team. I think that injury Bryce had in the preseason or whatever probably set him back. And I know Keon Brooks still gets a lot of there are some frustrating times for Keon, no doubt. But I can remember making a tweet last year that people definitely didn't like that. I think they're playing at Arkansas. And I said more or less that I would rather have Keon out there than Toppin, because I think Keon was in the game and people wanted Toppin. But I thought Keon had his uses. And I was ready for this season, honestly, with what Toppin had done last year. I was ready for him to have a bigger role. And I wish Bryce would have stuck around, just because I think those are the players at UK that you do need to keep around, guys who get into their second season. You know, there's no doubt on this year's team, Bryce would have had a bigger impact, especially there for a little while. But I can remember feeling like Bryce was maybe slightly overweight a little bit last year, not in great shape. And The one confusing aspect of Bryce here, though, which I think is totally fair, is he more or less wins them the LSU game at Rupp, and then like we don't see him for the rest of the season. So
it's the same narrative with Damian Collins right now, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, he's still talking about
playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the season's basically over, and now you're talking about having a guy. And I know Damian had his, you know, his father passed away, and that was going to put him in a bad spot this year. But Sean, when we talk about Providence, and I'm not trying to boil this down to the most simple aspects of this, just because, like, I mean, you know, the basketball X's and O's far more than me, but you just look at their starting five, like all five guys started their career somewhere else. We are familiar with a few of these guys, like obviously very familiar with Bryce because he played here, but like Noah Locke is an old guy who has played against Kentucky many times when he was at Florida, went to Louisville last season. Devin Carter started his career at South Carolina. It looks like he's had a pretty good year. I remember thinking he was a decent player at South Carolina. But I honestly don't know much about Bynum, their point guard, and I don't know much about Crosswell, besides the fact that they started at different schools and then ended up at Providence. I have to think, Sean, maybe I'm just totally wrong. Like, I have to think UK is pretty decisively favored in terms of the talent in this game.
I agree with you 100%. And I think Jacob Toppin is better than Bryce. I do. I think if Bryce had been at Kentucky this season, Bryce would have had a greater role, probably would have started some with all the injuries alongside Jacob. But I do think that Jacob's the better player. And I think that some of that probably played into that decision too, like in knowing where you're at and you got Chris coming in and things like that. But Bryce is a good player. I don't want to take anything away from Bryce. But I feel like we knew what was going to be this week when we saw this matchup. And I think we know what it's going to be. And, of course, I'm going to be at both those interviews tomorrow and going to be sitting there, and Bryce is going to be getting asked about playing Kentucky. Kentucky's going to be asked about playing Bryce because that's the storyline that's been created by this matchup. But I also think there's a line here where we may be talking too much about it, if that makes sense. Just given that's the only reason we're even talking about the matchup is because of the history. But looking at both these teams, they rely heavily on their starting five. Kentucky for reasons that are due to injury. But I could see this being a game where if it's close, it's going to be one of those typical Cal NCAA tournament games where you're going to have dudes playing 38 minutes and not much to the bench. Like, remember the Florida game on the road and you didn't sub in the second half? That could be the case that you see Friday night. If it's a close game, you might see those five not come out. Providence is going to rely on their starting five too. It's a lot of usage for those two lineups. Who's starting 30%. Five plays out?
Yeah.
Who's starting five plays out? Who foul trouble? Where's the foul trouble come from? I think foul trouble can make a significant impact in this game because both teams don't go to their bench. They're not deep. They don't rely on a lot of guys. CJ Frederick right now is banged up and it's pretty much just a warm body running around out there. Like he's not really in. Not a knock on CJ. It's an injury that you can't heal from without playing, but that's not an option at this point. Do we see Xavier Wheeler? I hope not. And here's why I say I hope not, because are you really going to, in the most pressure packed moment of your season, are you going to throw a guy out there that's not played in a month? That's not John Calipari and what he does. So if you do that, and here's the other side with this, if Xavier were to play, let's say he does practice, let's say he practiced all week. You put him out there and you lose. What is said post game and all weekend, Derek? Who gets the heat from that one?
Yeah.
And it'd be a disaster. Am I wrong?
I think they could use him.
They could use him.
I don't think you're wrong with where you're going with that by any means. I mean,
So the perfect scenario would be you're in a comfortable lead and you play him spot minutes here and there to get his feet wet and you advance to the next game and maybe increase that option in that role.
The issue that I see here is we talk about Cal shortening his bench and really getting tight with rotations when it comes to tournament basketball. I think we've already seen that just from the Vanderbilt game with the Dew not playing, right? I don't think he got in the game at all against Vanderbilt. And this was a guy that, even matchup base, you feel like would have had a better chance to help you out than someone like Lance Ware playing the four, which was a bizarre decision. I thought he had gotten away
from momentum and shifted momentum in the game when he went to that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to blame one guy by any means, and that wasn't really. But Lance came in and played bad like right away, and it was. And I think anytime he's out there with Oscar, you're not putting him in a good situation to begin with. So I'll put most of that blame on Cal.
Well, taking like, Reeves out that moment too, not very smart.
Yeah, I mean, he's on a heater and he's sitting over there with you on the sidelines down there. So I think Sevier, what you want, whether it's Sevier, I guess Stiero or whoever, like, I just don't know that in Kaysen's current health status, he can play 40 minutes a game. I mean,
that's the other angle with this. Yeah.
So you're in a tough situation anyway. And I don't know that Sevier is the answer necessarily, especially like you said, like the conditioning factor. We don't know what kind of shape he's in after not playing for how long's it been? He's not played since
he missed
Arkansas, right?
He missed it was the Florida game on that Saturday, I believe, was the last time that he played, if I'm not mistaken. That's at right.
Yeah.
And then he didn't play against Arkansas. And I don't want to say, like I said, I hope not. Like, I hope that he doesn't play, but it's more so I hope it's not just a forced type of thing. Like, if you want to put him in there for a 2-minute spurt at a certain point mid first half, then put him in there. But then I think it's a getting back out and then throwing back in here and there. I just don't know sustained. Now, if he goes in, he's playing well, does Cal ride with it? If he doesn't, do we look up and Sabir's playing north of 20 minutes? If he does, it's probably because Kaysen's not healthy or something else has gone wrong. And all this kind of – so much has happened. They've won games down the stretch. They lost to Vandy twice, but there was so much happening in that stretch with Kaysen being out and then playing without Kaysen and going to Arkansas that I don't think that we got our questions answered on Friday night. Well, we did. We know where Cal's going to go when they need a basket late, and it might end up being the fatal blow for the season. It's going to be Oscar on the block and giving the ball to one of the – I'm not putting this lightly. Oscar's not a good passer and struggles to make decisions quickly if you double him things and if he doesn't make the basket or live on the offensive glass. I feel like you're taking Oscar away from what he does best. So – post Oscar in a tie game or a 2-point game, you need a basket. Why don't we go middle ball screen with Antonio Reeves? Why don't we go middle ball screen with Kaysen Wallace and Antonio Reeves off the ball? Like, if Wallace is healthy, it needs to be Kaysen Wallace and Antonio Reeves with the ball in their hands as much as possible in this tournament if Kentucky wants to survive and have a pulse. Don't go through Oscar. Let Oscar do what Oscar does better than anyone that's played collegiately at Kentucky and probably collegiately in the game in general in the last 2 or 3 decades.
Yeah.
Live on the offensive glass. Let that be how Oscar makes an impact. Don't play through him.
I don't necessarily want this to turn into a bash Cal type episode. I truly don't.
No, it's not. I don't think
it's confusing to me still at this point in the season. Like, for whatever reason, it just feels like Cal's never really figured this team out, even now with the usage. We're talking about game 31 or 32, I guess. Forcing Lance right there next to Oscar again, especially in a game against a team like Vanderbilt, where I don't know if he was just trying to go like super heavy size advantage or what the goal was, but that was asking a lot of Lance and Oscar both to get out and try to cover smaller players who can go to the perimeter and take shots. You know, I just still didn't understand that. His comment there on his rate, I think it was on his coach's show the other night, where he's talking about, you know, Damian needing a role on this team. Well, I know Damian's season got off to a bad start because his father passed away. He was out of the rotation for a little bit, but you know, he's been here now. I mean, he was here the whole time though. Yeah. Like, he could have used him in SEC games.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was here, like you said, he was here last, this is a sophomore. Like, this guy's,
they got the Bahamas trip.
They had the Bahamas trip. Like, yeah. How are you still? And maybe that's just coach speak. That could just be a thing trying to lay the groundwork to, you know, try to get Damian back for another season. I don't know. If you're
same
asking
approach
me,
he took
like,
to Bryce last year, right?
Yeah. Well, like, he's saying this stuff about Damian. If you're asking me, like, he's not going to be out there Friday. If it's a close game, Damian's not going to be out unless there's, you know, severe foul trouble and, you know, Oscar can't be out there.
I guess that's the question I have for you. Do you see Damian Collins checking into that game in the first half Friday night? No foul trouble. Do you see him part of the rotation at any point?
With Crosswell, I'm just Croswell or however you say the kid's name for Providence. I'm just kind of looking at his build or whatever. I feel like Lance will probably be, because Croswell's 6'8", 240. So that's Damian Collins probably doesn't even weigh 200 pounds.
So,
right?
so does Cal play 7 guys? Is that what you see? CJ Frederick is the six. Do we
I think CJ and Lance are probably the two. Yep. Unless there's some kind of, you know, foul trouble where you have to go deeper. I think not playing Thierry the other day is a sign of where he's planning on going with this. And I think you had a stretch in that Vanderbilt game, which you almost never see, where you go 9 minutes or whatever without a whistle. And Damian was supposed to check in during that stretch and then didn't get put in.
So maybe we do see him.
Possibly, but I don't see it being some kind of big role. Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to try to ride Oscar as long as he can go.
I do too.
And then Toppin, I mean, you got to spell someone for Toppin, though, and it seems like he does not want to play Livingston at the four, but I'm almost to the point in games like this where you're facing teams that are essentially playing four guys who are 6'7" or shorter. Like, to me, Thierry is a better matchup in these games than Lance Ware, but I'm not the one that gets paid $9 million or whatever to coach ball, so maybe I just don't know. But that was one of the confusing things to me that last game. And I think you can also make an argument right now. I do want to be clear. I think Thierry is a very raw player who is going to provide very little offensive threat, but he provides more at this point in time than what CJ does, my opinion. And I can't figure out why they're playing CJ so much right now over – I mean, CJ is really not even looking to shoot the ball. I mean, he's hurt. He's clearly hurt. He's just running around. He's already like what CJ brings you, generally speaking, he's not going to turn the ball over. And at his best, he could hit open shots. Mm-hmm. And he's not able to hit open shots right now.
The Thierry is going to give you a defender who can make some energy plays, like the putback dunk at Arkansas. He's going to
get to the rim at times. Doesn't always finish.
A bigger guy that can guard multiple positions. And I do think.
Why did he do that? Why didn't he play Thierry? What would you say was the reason why? I can't figure it out.
I don't know, because that was the game that it fit. And what they had done, and you had Kaysen back. So Kaysen, it wasn't a dude having to run the one. You had Kaysen there. You had Antonio there. You didn't have to throw him at the point. I think a role for a dude Thierry off the ball for a 2 or 3 minute stretch if needed. I think that's where they need to go, unless CJ's able to hit open shots, and he's not even looking to score the ball. He shot a pull up jumper down there. They're not, and it didn't look comfortable at all.
Yeah, it seems like he's had to really change. Yeah, I mean, he's had to change how he does everything. And
so, why would you choose to play a hurt guy when you've got a healthy guy that can give you more? Now CJ,
maybe
healthy,
they learned that.
Now CJ healthy, you go CJ. I fully believe that, but if he's not healthy, no, you got to go a dude. So. I don't know. Like, if Toppin has to come out and Kaysen's able to go and able to play a lot of minutes, I do want to see if you're going to play CJ, then I think you got to go Kaysen, CJ, Antonio, play Chris at the four with Oscar. You have to.
Chris should be able to match up with Hopkins defensively, I would think.
He should. He's going to take some pressure off of Toppin in that moment, too. Yeah. Like, Bryce has all the pressure on him. I think the most pressure in this game is on Bryce. Probably putting a lot of people probably look at it as it could be the final blow to John Calipari if he loses to a former player that's thriving in a new role after on the heels of losing to St. Peter's and then missing the NCAA tournament the year before. The committee actually might have helped Cal by putting a former player up against him, because I just think Bryce is going to put way too much on his plate. I do. I think this is going to be a performance where he's going to shoot Providence out of a chance to win the game. I really think that the kid's going to put too much pressure on himself. If that's the way it goes, then it worked out for Kentucky. But if Kentucky wins this one, I think they're in New York. I think they beat Kansas State. I do.
Well, and that's getting to the point that what I was going to say. It's like it seems very much like, and you broke it down to start this episode, but it seems very much style of play oriented is the concerning part of Providence.
It is.
The things that they're good at, Kentucky has struggled with.
The perfect run for Kentucky, I sent it to you last night, would be you have to play Providence. You can't skip that one. Like, that's the one that there's no way around it. Providence, and let's just say K-State advances as the three. Like, let's just say chalk holds. Then what I do actually think could happen, love to see Michigan State again in the Sweet 16. Given the metrics in KenPom, I know it's Izzo in March, but it wouldn't shock me if it's Kentucky, Michigan State, and Madison Square Garden, and it's Duke at the top half of that thing that Kentucky's playing in the Elite Eight. And Duke is another team, metrics-wise, that just looking at it, I think that there's teams that Kentucky – this region fits Kentucky. The team that scares me the most, honestly, is Marquette, given what they do offensively and where they rank in that number. That's a team Kentucky will struggle to guard.
Yeah, I only watched Marquette play one game, and it was against Xavier on Saturday in the Big East Championship, and they looked incredible. So yeah. I'll also say I only watched one NC State basketball game this year, and it was against North Carolina, and I also thought NC State was, like, amazing to watch, very fun. And it turns out they were not very good. But, you know, that just goes to show you small sample sizes. You see a team on a good night, you can see a team on a bad night, and it can influence your decision. But, no, Marquette, I mean, the Big East is a good basketball league. To win it the regular season and then to run through the conference tournament as well, that is a good team. And I know Shaka's career has been kind of strange because he got a huge head coaching job at Texas and didn't really do anything with it. But this is a guy who has taken a team to a Final Four in the past. And Marquette is a program that has been to the Final Four in the past. So
that metric that we look at, that number that people pay attention to all the time, is – what teams are ranked inside the top 20 in both offensive and defensive efficiency in KenPom, right? There's four of them right now. Houston, 11th in offense, 4th in defense. Alabama, 19th in offense. But here's the big one, 3rd in defense. That's the difference for Nate Oates this year, that I think that they got the defensive side to go with what they do offensively. Plus, they're going to have the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
Majority of the time. And then the other ones, Texas, 18th and 11th. And then UConn. 6th offensively, 18th defensively. Those are the four teams ranked inside the top 20 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. How many of those get to the Final Four? I'm willing to bet at least one of them's there. Maybe two. I don't know. It's going to be a good tournament.
Yeah, I've heard you on other podcasts and just from us talking. You're a big fan of offense late in the year. You must be in love with the West region.
Yeah.
With Kansas, UCLA. I mean, they're not both top 20. You're talking about UCLA, but UCLA right now in KenPom's 25th in offense, 1st in defense. But the caveat there is they've had pretty serious injuries down the stretch, one in particular with Jalen Clark, which is going to hurt them. But that's the region to me that, like, thank God Kentucky avoided that region. Because, you know, the 3 seed in that region, instead of playing a Kansas State, like, they would have had to play Gonzaga. And we saw what happened to that earlier this season when they played them. I mean, I think any of those teams could get out of that region and really be – I think any of those top four in that region with Kansas, UCLA – I have that right? It is Kansas, UCLA, Gonzaga, and worst seed being UConn, which, I mean, you look at the metrics, that's one of the teams, like, all year, I think the ESPN does, like, their thing. They've had some kind of, like, long-running piece on that website every year. They pick 8 teams, and one of those 8 teams that they've picked based on the metrics has won the title. And UConn was included. I think like 3 teams from the West region were included in that thing, which is really crazy. I'm with you. Like the East region, I mean, even if you had to like go play at Purdue, I think that's a winnable game.
It is. And there's the 3-point shooting too, the 3-point percentage. Kentucky is one of the better 3-point shooting teams in the region when it comes to percentage and where they rely on those shots. Like, I don't know if you saw that number out there yesterday or not, but there was a lot of talk about – so right here, top 6 seeds ranked by 3-point percentage. Kentucky is 104. The next highest is Marquette, 137. K-State, 174. Duke, 197. Tennessee, 227. And Purdue, 255. So, like, you're in a region where what Kentucky does, Kentucky might get to do in every matchup. And that's where I was coming from the other night. And some people got confused when I said this, that I want to see Cal mix in some zone. You can't do it against Vandy. You can't do it against teams that are shooting the crap out of the ball, but scout it and know your scout and mix in. And if you play 7 to 10 possessions a zone, out of timeouts or side out of bounds situations, just mix it up and it changes it up. But my upset pick is actually Florida Atlantic to get to the Sweet 16.
Dusty May, you're a believer.
Yep. And I think, honestly, Florida Atlantic or Memphis, either one, I think is getting to the Sweet 16, whoever wins that matchup. I think they're going to beat the 1 seed Purdue and advance on, and then Louisiana over Tennessee. That's my upset pick of the first round.
I can get behind that one.
Tennessee struggles to score the ball. Louisiana offensive efficiency and things, like, I think that's a team. I think that's going to be a close game. But Eric, we got about 2 minutes left before the timer kicks us off here. I've got to go run and grab my laptop charger if you want to take over for a few seconds here.
Yeah. I guess I can just break down kind of where the show's going. Sean will primarily be hosting Kentucky Daily. I think he's probably planning on going a little bit more guest oriented, a little bit more guest heavy, maybe probably even heavier basketball. And he, once he gets back here, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but just with my work schedule, it's been very difficult to find all the time to hop on here. I mean, I think I will certainly be making appearances, but in general, at this point, every episode will feature Sean. Not every episode will feature myself. And I've enjoyed hopping on here today, and I would love to hop on here whenever it is when the season ends to discuss how it ended, the team moving forward, things like that. And if Sean wants to talk football or baseball or anything moving forward, I'll certainly be happy to hop on there. But if you're a big Sean fan, not so much a fan of me, this is good news for you. If you do like me, get at me at other places. I'm on Twitter. You can read my baseball newsletter, anything like that. But I know we got to go here in a minute, so you can close it out.
Yeah, I think we got about 40 seconds here. So yeah, I'll Derek will be popping on anytime he wants, but starting tomorrow, be under a new contract with the pod, and I will take it a guest direction, a couple of episodes a week, and then some solo things. We'll still hit the football talk, still hit the basketball talk, and anything else, but please stay subscribed to this. Kentucky Daily will be a daily podcast. It'll be back to churn out probably 20 plus episodes a month here very soon, but as always, he's Derek Terry. I'm Sean Smith. We'll catch you next time on Kentucky Daily.